Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food, culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. With my Below the Mason-Dixon charm, I spotlight the culture of the food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking The Inspired Vegan with Bryant Terry. If you're listening live right now on heritageradionetwork.org, we have a live call-in number. Give us a buzz. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. In the studio, in the flesh, we have Bryant Terry. Brian is an award-winning chef and food justice activist. Brian, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you for having me.
I'm happy to be here. It's a long time coming, huh?
It's good to be back in the BK.
Yes. So I first have to start off, and I want to talk a little bit about moms and food. I'm bringing it up because of two reasons. I think this Sunday is Mother's Day.
Yes.
And
it reminds me, I need to buy some cards.
Same here. I think we're a little tardy, Brian. We're a little tardy. And the second reason, there's a new show on TV One. I'm not sure if you've heard about it. It's called My Mama Throws Down.
I've read about it. I have not seen
it. I'm surprised you want to judge.
I think some of the dishes that they might be presenting on there, I might scare them away with.
You think so? No, I mean, let's see. So I watched two episodes. Jessica Harris is a judge on one. They had the cast of Soul Food, the movie. Mm-hmm. So Nicole Ari Parker and the two other chicks. I can't remember their
names. Melinda Williams, I think.
Yeah, Melinda Williams and,
somebody else.
Yeah, Vanessa Williams, who's actually Vanessa from Bed-Stuy. Yes, yeah. Yes. And then last night they had Chef Marvin Woods.
Cool.
And shout out to friend of the show, excuse me, Heather Watkins Jones. But they had a squash casserole on there that's very similar to something you would probably do in your book.
You know, I'd be happy to come on. For me, it's just I'm all about good food. So if it's banging, I'm ready to eat.
You have to check the show out. I think it's a really cool celebration or show, fun show, family show that celebrates moms in the kitchen.
I'm interested to see it. You know, reading the description, I'm always excited about shows that have the potential to celebrate and elevate African-American or Afro-diasporic foodways. But when I read that the show had an element of comedy in it, I think I was a little nervous that it could potentially reinforce stereotypes about African-American foodways as well as African-Americans themselves. So I don't know. I need to see what's up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I didn't like, and I'll tell you what I like about the show. The first thing is it's produced by the same people as I think Chopped or Top Chef. So the production on the show is really nice.
Okay.
It's not like, you know, half produced. But what I didn't like is the dozens. They have like this, it's like this little part in the show where each team, because the family is there, so you have the mothers competing, mm-hmm. and then you have the family behind them, and then they do like a little quiz, game show, whatever, at different segments or different parts of the show, and they have a competition between the blue and the red family where they do the dozens.
Right. I mean, you know, it's just like, I think African-American humor or African humor is important, and I think we need to recognize and celebrate it. But at the same time, why we always got to be clowning? You know, it's just like, if it's a food show, can we just talk about food? Can we talk about, you know, skills and dishes without having to infuse jokes and humor into it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
They may be able to pull it off seamlessly, but I need to see it.
Yeah, you have to check it out, Brian. I'm curious to see what you think of it.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break, and We'll get more into recipes if you're trying to figure out what you're going to do for Mother's Day, what you need to cook for your mom. We'll talk more. Keep listening to Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. You must have been hiding under a rock if you haven't heard of Bryant Terry. He's an Oakland-based chef and cookbook author. His latest book is titled The Inspired Vegan. So, Brian, I have to ask you right off the bat, the word vegan in the title, how do you feel about that, really?
To be just 100%.
Be 100. Can I be 100 with
you? Let me keep it real with you. I actually do not like vegan in the title of my books. And I'm very intentional about having just food that's devoid of animal products to give people an option to present, you know, something that's sumptuous and satisfying that doesn't necessarily have to be meat laden. But at the same time, I know how that word triggers people. I know what it brings up. It brings up, you know, notions of just bland, boring, disgusting food. It brings up these ideas of folks who are kind of like finger wagging nannies, you know, telling you how you should eat and screaming and yelling from their soapbox. But at the same time, you know, my publisher has certain ideas about how the book should be marketed, and you know, sometimes I don't have complete say over that. But, you know, I feel like if people can get past that and actually get to the meat of the book.
No puns. Or puns intended.
That folks will be pleasantly surprised. This is, you know, I feel like my food, what I don't like to emphasize the lack of meat. And what I emphasize in my cooking is the abundance of diverse fruits and vegetables and grains and beans that I think most Americans are missing in their daily meals. And so I like to just celebrate local seasonal good food.
Well, I have to bring this up in particular why I asked the question about the vegan in the title. Both of your books, your last two books, you're the author of actually three books. You focus a lot on Black or African American heritage cooking and culture. And for me personally, a person who did not eat pork or beef for over 10 years, when you say I'm vegetarian, I'm vegan, you know, they think you, you acting like white folks. Or I mean, this is a real interview. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm going to ask you this question on air. Have you decided or have you thought about not having the word vegan just so you can reach a segment of people? You know, so people buy your book. Because I when I open up your book and I look at the recipes, I know that there's stuff in there that my mother would cook. But based on seeing vegan in the title, she's not going to buy it. She's not even, I couldn't even send this to her for Mother's Day. So I mean, have you thought about that?
Well, I just want to reiterate, if it were up to me, if I had 100% creative control over the titling of my book, it would not be in there. And I feel like there are many other words that could more adequately describe the type of cooking I'm presenting. But at the same time, I do feel like, especially with my last book, Vegan Soul Kitchen, those two words, vegan and African-American cuisine, or, you know, just those two kind of designations, they seem so oxymoronic for people. They're just like, those two things shouldn't even go together, like Black food and vegan. And so I feel like it's a great way to start the conversation. And, you know, if I'm out promoting right. the book, doing interviews, you know, just book readings, I think once I can talk about the more complicated issues that I'm dealing with, then, you know, it opens up people to actually try it. And at the same time, I feel like vegan has moved from the margins closer to the mainstream. You know, if you think about the fact that you have folks like, you know, Oprah Winfrey trying a vegan diet for 9 weeks and then having her whole staff do it for a week, or Venus Williams embracing a vegan diet after she had discovered that she had an autoimmune disease. Yeah. I think more people, more Black folks, are actually feeling like it's not as scary. But if you think about just our cultural, the history of black folks in food, there have been so many people who've promoted, you know, plant-based foods, whether it was, you know, when I think about my own kind of origins or excitement about these issues, it came from people of African descent, whether it was, you know, reading How to Eat to Live by Dr. Elijah Muhammad, or, you know, Cooking with Mother Nature by Dick Gregory, or Black Seventh-day Adventists in my community in Memphis, or Black Rastafarians that I've met. There are folks of African descent who celebrate and eat this type of food. And I just want our people to see it as an option and know that they can have one meal or one day where they're not eating meat and know that they will still be satisfied.
So I'm going to stay on the black folks soapbox. I have another question.
Let's stay there.
Yes, let's stay there. I mean, it's good to have you in the studio and we can talk about these things that we don't typically see in print or other forms of media where you're being interviewed. What I want to talk about now is you are essentially the golden child, the golden boy for anyone, particularly folks or black or white, who when they're looking and thinking about food, who can we get? Hmm. Who can we get to write or talk about black food? I think at this point, Bryant Terry is the first name that comes up. How do you feel about that? That's the first part of the question. And the second part of the question is, do you think that there aren't enough black people that are doing food work around the country? Or do you think there are enough or not enough?
I think there are a lot of black folks who are doing food work around food issues, and I fully recognize a lot of the privileges that I've had based on just, you know, mentors and, you know, connected to different publishers. But I always recognize that I'm standing on the shoulders of my ancestors, and the work that I do is deeply influenced by elders like, you know, obviously folks like Edna Lewis, mm-hmm. you know, Jessica B. Harris, and just scores of activists and chefs and folks who have been celebrating black food ways. And so I think it's important for me to recognize that the work that I'm doing, it isn't necessarily new. I'm not inventing anything. I'm simply, you know, celebrating and kind of reintroducing mm-hmm. these old concepts and ideas to a lot of people. Because if you think about like traditional black food ways, you know, so often black folks didn't have money to be buying a lot of meat. And so by default, our diets were more plant-based. And, you know, there's this idea when people talk about African-American cuisine in particular, they either talk about the comfort foods of the cuisine, like the deep fried fatty meats and the sugary desserts, or they default towards talking about the survival food. You know, the fact that many enslaved Africans had to rely on the remnants of plantation owners' tables. But that's just such a simplistic way of looking at the cuisine. And, you know, my ancestors and so many elders and people write about just the way in which black folks have been growing food in their backyard gardens. They've been, you know, the origins of the African-American diet is replete with nutrient-dense tubers and leafy greens. And so part of my mission is to kind of take our food out of the ghetto. And even the fact that, you know, I have a book, The Vegan Soul Kitchen, that's, you know, kind of specifically looking at African-American food ways. I don't want one book around it. I want to normalize black food ways. I want people to, when they think about eating, you know, seasonal, local, organic food, to default towards thinking about our food just as quickly as they would any other cultural cuisine. And so,
our food has been hijacked, though. I mean, this goes to my question. That I want to ask again is, you know, our food has been hijacked, and when people, and I've had experiences when there are food events around New York City and there's, you know, you say, hey, you're having this food event, who's going to be on the panel? And it's devoid of black people. So how can it's there are a lot of hurdles and barriers to make our food kind of the topic when people don't know. A lot of food professionals or people who are doing food work, particularly white folks, they don't know any other black people that are doing food work. They only know Marcus Samuels and Bryant Terry. What suggestions do you have for those folks? Where should they start?
Well, let me just take it in a different direction. I think that we, folks of African descent, we have to start creating and supporting existing institutions that celebrate black food ways, whether it's, you know, us really supporting Cuisine Noir, a magazine that's, you know, dedicated
love that magazine.
To black food ways, or listening to your radio show, or, you know, scores of organizations throughout the country that are really trying to, you know, build and sustain local foodways or food systems. I just feel like I'm kind of over just trying to like get in other people's spaces. And not to say that, you know, if I'm invited, I won't show up. But at the same time, I think I'm over complaining about us not being represented in these mainstream spaces. And I want to put more energy into creating and owning and driving institutions and organizations and events that are run by us, because then we will be present and we will have voice and we will be able to like actually bring in the folks that we know are doing this work and have been doing it for decades. And so that's where I'm at.
There it is, y'all. Brian Terry. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get into the meat of the Inspired Vegan. Keep listening to Hot Grease on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. Got me mad with crazy name. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Where's that nasty strand chain? Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Sound like baby in a candy store. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Sound like something I tried for. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. No, it'd be this way. He didn't warn me. I'm moving in to stay. Find my time is once right. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. At Whole Foods Market, we review each and every product that hits our shelves. Our cleaning products are no exception. Our EcoScale ranking system rates each household cleaner so you know what you're getting. Now, during Earth Month and any time of the year, learn more at WholeFoodsMarket.com. Welcome back to Hot Grease on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm sorry, I keep saying .com, Joe. I forgot we're a nonprofit now. .org. You can check out our program schedule and show archives on our website. We are chatting seasonal ingredients, creative recipes, and mouth-watering menus with Bryant Terry today. His latest book is titled The Inspired Vegan. So we were just listening to one of the songs that you listed in one of your recipes in the spring chapter of your book. I'm all in the spring chapter. I'd like dogtail every single thing in the spring chapter. And the first one is the paprika peanut. Where'd you come up with that? I love nuts, Bryant.
Well, you know, my wife always jokes about how I like to use alliteration in the title of my recipe. So paprika peanuts just kind of flows off the tongue really smoothly. But, you know, I lived in New Orleans for 4 years. I went to college in New Orleans. So I have a palate that leans towards spicy.
Yes.
And so I thought that presenting these as kind of a snack, but, you know, using paprika rather than cayenne, as I would typically do, would give them a little oomph, but not overpowering for a lot of people who might not be used to as spicy dishes. And, you know, it's just the red hue makes them visually appealing, and it's a really satisfying snack.
So do we need to warm the nuts up kind of to get the flavor out, or can we just take some raw peanuts and then do the cayenne and the sugar and the sea salt mixture with the paprika? Or do we really need to preheat the oven?
I think you do, because I found that it just really helps the nuts heat from the inside out, and then it just gives them a nice mellow toasting, and it helps to just kind of like infuse all the spices a lot better than if they're doing without heating.
And have you tried these? See, I'm thinking, I'm like, ooh, paprika nuts. I can just put these on top of like a salad, right?
Yeah, you could definitely do that. I've done it before. I mean, one thing I like to do is just think about creative ways that I could repurpose recipes and use them in a number of dishes. So, yeah, from doing that to, a number of uses.
So, I have a confession here. I feel like I had a Johnny Cake before, but maybe I hadn't. I went to St. Croix a few weeks ago, and we stopped at Lorraine's Chicken Shack. Oh my God, the best chicken in the world. But what was even better were the Johnny Cakes. Mm. And so I'm like, yeah, I equate Johnny Cakes, and you grew up in Memphis from the South, mm-hmm. to hot water cornbread.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say that's the same thing?
I think it's pretty much the same thing as far as
okay, because I'm like, I've had this before. I feel like it's different. I feel like Johnny Cakes is flour and hot water cornbread is cornmeal.
Huh. I've always just used a mixture. I feel like the flour just helps to lighten them a little bit, but I think the cornmeal is key to give it that crunch and that rich flavor.
Yeah, because I'm totally excited. You have a in the same chapter, the spring chapter. And in Brian Terry's new book, your book is actually divided up spring, summer, autumn, winter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And God, I'm loving this one. The rustic Johnny cakes with caramelized onions and relish. How did you come up with this?
I just feel like Johnny cakes is such a, in terms of memories of food that I grew up eating, like hot water cornbread was just a staple in my grandmother's house. And then my mother made them all the time, and we would actually have them for breakfast. We pour them, you know, put some butter and some maple syrup on them, and that was just all I needed. But I like to think about ways of taking, you know, dishes that I might have traditionally eaten sweet and then kind of presenting them with a more savory twist. And so I thought using the caramelized onion relish, I mean, it's leans towards sweet, but actually that onion kind of mellows it out. So it's just a nice kind of like appetizer. But, you know, with this dish, I really feel like it's not meant to be eaten alone. It's really meant to be eaten in the bowl with the butter bean and tomato drenched collards with parsley.
Oh my God.
You know, the savory tomato broth will soak up in the Johnny cakes, and the relish will give it some more, you know, flavor, and everything just comes together and just goes pow in your mouth.
I think with any of your green, your wilted or either sauteed greens, the Johnny cake is like a perfect addition. This same chapter, you have the wilted dandelion greens with the hot garlic dressing and garlic chips. Johnny cakes would be perfect with that.
That was inspired by one of Jessica B. Harris's recipes. Shout out to Jessica B. Harris, the brilliant Jessica B. Harris. You know, Johnny cakes is just, I feel like they're kind of like a blank palette, and whatever juices or sauce or broth that you add to it, that's what makes it pop.
And now I'm sure you've been here a few days. You see, this weather is crazy here in New York, right?
It's been a little erratic.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And so, you know, I'm like, what other? So maybe if you give us some more of your favorite recipes from spring, we'll have a true spring here in this city. What are some of your other favorites out of this spring chapter?
Well, I actually, because it's a little overcast today, I feel like I actually want to go back to the autumn section of the book and just and invite people to try the black eyed peas and garlic ginger braised mustard greens with quick pickled mustard greens, sesame seeds, and tamari, because it's such a comforting and soothing kind of stew. So I feel like that might be a good one for today, actually.
That is a perfect one. I know. I wish it would do something else. But you're in town. For folks who are listening, we're here in Brooklyn, New York. We have folks from all over the country that listen to the podcast. But for folks who are here in New York City, you're going to be doing quite a few events that include cooking demos, right?
Yes. Tonight I'm doing a reading at Blue Stockings bookstore, and it's actually, I'm just going to be kind of like reading and vibing and freestyle rhyming and stuff. So no cooking demo tonight, but I will be doing a demo on Thursday. We're doing a family event. My wife and I are actually co-facilitating a workshop and talking about just feeding kids. You know, we have a 1-year-old daughter, and it's constantly on our minds. How can we feed her and infuse the values and the desire to celebrate our cultural food? So we're actually going to be doing a cooking demo and talking about feeding infants, toddlers, as well as tweens and teens.
I love that.
And then the event I'm most excited about is the Brooklyn Food Conference on the 12th, Saturday the 12th at Brooklyn Tech. And it's just going to be bringing together activists and chefs and artists and creative people who care about food for a day of strategizing and celebrating and organizing. And so I'll be keynoting one of the plenaries. I'll be doing a cooking demo. I'll be, you know, talking on a panel after Byron Hurt debuts his film Soul Food Junkies.
Yeah, I've seen it. You're in the very beginning of it. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know.
And you're doing something at Greenlight Bookstore on Thursday.
Yes. Now, big up to Greenlight.
Totally, my favorite bookstore ever. Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame they know me by name. I spent so much money in there. Let me ask you this. Are they using one of your recipes to create the vegan treats, or is it from the annex that's next door?
Oh, no. So Green Grape Annex is actually going to be serving up a number of small bites
from your book or from
the Inspired Vegan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they will be, and I'll be doing a demo there too. I'll be cooking up some greens that
night. Oh, cool. Yeah, I love Green Grape and Green Life. The owner of Green Grape has been on Hot Grease a few times. Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna go down memory lane with Mr. Terry, but right now we have a little music for you. Keep listening.
Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. The elections have made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is executive produced by myself and Jack Inslee. It's being engineered today by Joe G. And this program is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. If you're just tuning in live, you missed almost 20 minutes of Brian Terry on Hot Grease, but that's fine because, you know, the podcast is always available on iTunes. So, Brian, I want to take a trip down memory lane. The Memphis thing we mentioned already, the New Orleans thing, and the Brooklyn thing. So one of my good friends remembers you before you were Brian Terry. Her name is Dara Furlow, and she said you were an intern with Clinton Hill CSA mm-hmm. back in the day. I think this is before you went to cooking school.
I was in cooking school.
Okay, and she was like, I remember him because she was one of the core members and core founders of the CSA.
Yep.
So, yeah, when she told me that, I was like, really now? You remember Dara?
Oh, yeah, I remember Dara. She was, I feel like she kind of served as an important mentor during that period.
Oh, really?
Because I was the community food educator at the CSA, the Clinton Hill CSA, and she was a trained chef, and yeah. She just really helped me kind of along my way because I was in cooking school, so big up to Dara Furlow.
Yeah, she has a great business with Love from Brooklyn. You have to totally connect with her. She has three kids. She has a three-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, three-year-old and two other kids, so that's great. So, wait a minute. Here's another little fact. Maybe I've been stalking you that I know this. Didn't you live in Biggie's apartment?
No, I lived on the block.
Okay, see, that's more, you lived on the block. I thought you lived in Biggie's apartment in what some people say. Well, I'm going to call it Clinton Hill. Some folks call it Fort Greene. What did you call it when you were here?
I called it on the border of Bed-Stuy and Fort Greene. So we were somewhere in the middle.
Really? That's what you called? Really? How many years ago was that?
Wow. I moved in that apartment 1 year after I moved to New York. So 1998 up until 2005. I lived in that same apartment.
Oh, and you called it the border of Bed-Stuy, Fort Greene.
Because the thing is, when I moved in there in 98, it was Bed-Stuy. But by the time I left, it was Clinton Hill. And so, you know, they were always pushing the boundaries of Clinton Hill as gentrification was spreading its reach. So said we were somewhere in the middle.
And have you been to Bed-Stuy now to see that it's now like the new food destination?
I didn't know that.
Oh, really? So Joe Loft, you know, for people who are listening, Joe Loft is hands down, I think, the best Senegalese food.
Big up to Joe Loft.
They moved.
Let me tell you something. I went over to Joe Loft because I live right on that corner on St. James Place.
That's why I mentioned it.
I went over there and I literally was almost in tears because I saw it shut down. And then I talked to somebody. They're like, no, they moved down the street.
They moved on Bedford. They moved on Bedford, which is Bed-Stuy.
Okay, cool.
Bed-Stuy.
Look, I got through graduate school on Joe Loft. That was my life runs on Joe Loft back then.
Wow. What are some of your other favorite joints back in the day in Brooklyn that may be gone now?
Wow.
Or still around?
Let me see. Well, you know, Joe Loft was definitely like almost three times a week destination for me. Brooklyn Moon, they used to just have some good, you know, comforting foods back in the day.
That's still around.
Tilly's, I don't know if they're still there, but
Tilly's,
you know,
actually just closed. Really sad.
Wow.
Tilly's closed. It was a coffee shop, y'all, right in Fort Greene. But yeah, they were around like I think 8 or 9 years, but they closed down maybe 6 months ago.
Oh darn, that's RIP Tilly's.
Yeah, RIP, rest in peace. So I have to ask you about Memphis, and the reason why I'm asking you about Memphis and the Brooklyn thing, because hot fried chicken like Gus's and. So, did you eat Gus and stuff growing up?
I mean, I used to eat Gus, Interstate Barbecue. Like, I was a very greedy meat eating child. And so, you know, the thing is, I feel like because I used to eat so much of that delicious barbecue and fried chicken, that informs my palate. And so if I'm going to be eating, you know, women sharing vegan food, it needs to be like deeply flavored, sumptuous. And I always hope people use recipes as a guide. If you feel like you want to modify, if you want to use, you know, what you have available instead of going out and buying some collards, use that Swiss chard you're growing in your yard. Or if you want to use a little less fat, do that. But you know, I'm like, I for me, I don't care how ethical, how sustainable, how healthful food supposedly is. Mm-hmm. If it's not banging, I don't want it. And I think most people are like that, you know. So I start with food, and we can talk about all the other issues after you know, the delicious flavor.
And lastly, since we're going down, walk down memory lane, New Orleans.
Yeah,
how did New Orleans, going to school in New Orleans, influence your palate in terms of flavor? And
I mean, same thing. It's just like that, you know, the food in New Orleans is so just rich and sumptuous. And, you know, the thing is, like, you have Cajun Creole flavors, but some of the best African food that I used to, that I've eaten was in New Orleans. I mean, there was this banging Cameroonian restaurant. I think it was called Benichin. And I used to be there, like, almost two, three times a week. And, you know, just, like, obviously, you know, like Leah Chase's, Dookie Chase's amazing, but there's just like so many down low, off the beaten path, amazing spots that you won't know about unless you know about it. Hole in the walls. And it's some of the best food that one would ever get. I haven't been back to New Orleans in a couple of years, so I'm hoping some of my old haunts are still around.
Yeah, let's hope so. New Orleans has changed a lot.
I heard. New Orleans
is, Brian, I am honored to add you to one of the guests of Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you so much.
And folks, Brian Terry, you can find him on Twitter. He's Brian Terry on Twitter?
Just at Brian Terry, BryantTerry. And you can also find me on my website. You find out about my events here in New York City this week. It's Bryant-Terry.com. It's Bryant-Terry.com.
And folks, real deal, you should pick up the Inspired Vegan. Even if you're not a vegan, the recipes are banging. The food, everything is great. And pick up Vegan Soul Kitchen, all of its titles. Must do. Listeners, thank you again. Brian, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Hot Grease. Remember, you can join me here every Monday live at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled. In my song, the preacher, the banker, the drummer, and then makes no difference what group I'm in. I am everyday people. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.